Welcome to the Prader-Willi Syndrome edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the PWS community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking with Paige Rivard in Omaha, Nebraska. Paige is former CEO of the Prader-Willi Syndrome Association, USA, which she headed for the past 3 years until early July. Paige's 13-year-old son, Jake, has Prader-Willi, and she remains very active in the community. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
So thank you. Likewise, let's talk about Prader-Willi syndrome. What is the disease like, and what is it like being a parent of a child who has it?
That is a great question, Larry, with a very long answer. It's an interesting disease. Prader-Willi syndrome, of course, is a chromosomal disorder on the 15th chromosome. When we were first diagnosed, obviously, a lot of infants start out in the NICU, and it took us about 3 weeks to get our diagnosis. So throughout that time, we were, waiting. We had done several tests. And we were finally diagnosed with Prader-Willi syndrome. And it's something that I think, nobody's ready for. We had certainly not heard of the disorder. I guess I should say my husband did Google it a few days before we received our actual diagnosis and said, oh gosh, I hope it's not this Prader-Willi syndrome. But once we learned and got the diagnosis, we started right in on just the path of trying to educate ourselves and, went into it with the mindset of just doing everything we could do to help our son live his best life possible. And, luckily, we had a great geneticist who was able to diagnose Jake. And, when he came in and gave us that diagnosis, he said Jake has two great parents. He's got a lot of great genes. He just has this one chromosome that is, different. So set your expectations high for him. Push him to do what, the best he can and offer him the best life possible. And, things are going to be okay. So that sort of started us on the path of just advocacy and education and, I should share that, before we received our diagnosis in the NICU, we did have a neonatologist who was training medical students and brought a group of medical students around one morning and said, outside the curtain, said, this one is bad. There's nothing we can do for him. We don't know what is wrong with him. So let's just get in and get out. And that was devastating to hear. But like I said, once we did receive the diagnosis and started educating ourselves, we knew that our son had a good life ahead of him.
Let me ask you, I understand that Prader-Willi affects about 1 in 15,000 to 20,000 births every year. How many children are living with Prader-Willi in the United States, as far as you know?
That is another great question. We really don't know. We, as you said, 1 in 15,000 to 1 in 20,000. But we believe that there are a lot of children throughout the world that are undiagnosed. So I really always hate to put a number on that right now because we truly just don't know. But we know that, with the testing that we have now, more children are getting diagnosed. But we, as far as even in our organization in PWSA, we were getting calls from families who had children, 8, 9, 10, that still hadn't been diagnosed or just received their first diagnosis. So it's very hard to tell exactly how many children are out there.
Now, what's interesting to me is that when these babies are first born, they don't want to eat. You practically have to force feed them. And then a switch goes off and then they can't stop eating.
That's correct. It's called failure to thrive. And, they have such low muscle tone that they're unable to suck. So they can't breastfeed or bottle feed. And, Jake is 13, as you said, but even that short time ago, the common procedure was to have a surgery and insert a G-tube and feed him that way. We tried, getting him to feed on a bottle. He just was not getting enough nutrients. And he was definitely diagnosed as failure to thrive. So we had to do something to get nutrients in him so that we placed a G-tube. Now they're working harder to just do an NG, tube through the nose. and really work on that sucking mechanism. But it really depends on the child. And yes, their failure to thrive to start. And then eventually that, in a cruel way, you know, turns around and they are hungry all the time. And if they're not monitored and if their food isn't watched very closely, you know, they, because of their intense hunger, can overeat. It's the number one cause of childhood obesity. And so it is a very interesting disorder.
We know of lots of stories of families who have had to put locks on their refrigerators, electronic sensors, security systems to make sure kids don't go out at night looking for food. Is that part of your story as well?
Yes, we did start doing that as soon as he turned probably two. We locked our refrigerator and our pantry. You know, we always had Jake on a very rigid schedule. He had breakfast, snack, lunch, snack, and dinner. But as you know, in our society, food is everywhere. And so it's very hard to, you can control it in your home, but when you go outside of your home into a restaurant or a birthday party or whatever situation you're in, it's hard to control the food. And we did have locks on our pantry. And again, every child is different. Now that he's 13, we no longer have locks and on our refrigerator and pantry. But we're here and we monitor him, you know. It's really interesting because he hasn't hit what we call the severe hyperphagia stage. Jake is a very tall, he's almost 5'4", thin, you know, young man, young kid. And his issues are really not as much around food right now as they are around all the other things that happen, the behavioral issues. He also is diagnosed with autism. So he has a lot of OCD, repetitive anxiety issues. So that's really right now, at this stage in our life, what we're dealing with that is much harder. And we still, like I said, continue to monitor his food and, you know, their metabolism is a lot slower. So we work very hard to not give him a lot of sugar and a lot of carbs, so that he will maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Let me ask, you said OCD, repetitive behaviors, fixations. Is he fixated on food? Does he talk about it a lot?
He doesn't, actually. He does want to know, you know, when he knows exactly what time he's supposed to eat. So when it hits 10 o'clock, that is his snack time and he knows it. So he will come get me and he will say, you know, it's snack time. Can I get my snack? So from that perspective, he is much more fixated on it than, you know, a typical child. But he's not one right now where he's going out and searching for food.
I understand. So let me ask you, you know, the fact that you have a rare disease patient advocacy organization would seem to me an enormous source of strength and support for families out there who may be struggling all on their own and by themselves. How did you get involved in the organization? How long has it been around? And do you have some kind of a mission statement or objective?
Yeah, so PWSA USA has been around for almost 50 years. In 2025, it will be 50 years. And really, the three pillars of the organization are advocacy and awareness, family support, and research. And we do a lot for families to help them through the journey, you know, from birth all the way through when some children will live with their families for quite a while. Some children will go into group homes. So we are there from, like I said, birth through the school age times, which can be challenging to get schools, parents, you know, teachers, everyone to understand what's going on with Prader-Willi syndrome. But those are our three pillars. And I'm very proud of the organization. I think, you know, we do a lot to help families in many different aspects. And, you know, our mission you asked about is to enhance the quality of life and empower those affected by Prader-Willi syndrome.
So it's more about getting through day by day rather than focusing on long-term research on the scientific level.
We do it all, to be honest. We focus on the day-to-day. We also really reinvigorated our advocacy efforts. Last year, PWSA took a group of advocates, 50 plus advocates, to DC, and we met with our representatives on the Hill. We had over 75 meetings, and we also were able to meet with the FDA at that time. And from that meeting, we also then applied to host a externally led PFDD, a patient-focused drug development meeting, which we just held at our 37th convention in Orlando, which was in June. And that is all around research and, you know, how do we get the FDA and the sponsors, the pharmaceutical companies, to continue to focus on research and then get those drugs passed and approved for our loved ones. Right now, the only drug approved for Prader-Willi syndrome was approved back in 2000, and it's human growth hormone. And that is really just there to help kids with stature, muscle mass, but it doesn't address all of the other issues, the hyperphagia, the behavioral issues. Mm-hmm. So we really need treatments to help our kids, you know, on a day-to-day basis. So we do focus on research. We give grants for research to researchers who are studying Prader-Willi syndrome. And, you know, it's something that I was very passionate about when I was at the organization.
Very interesting. So what about some anecdotes, if you have a positive stories, maybe progress that your son has made, you know, despite this illness, this rare disease? Do you see any instance of some improvement over time?
You know, for us, I always say I think we've been very blessed. Jake has, obviously, Prader-Willi syndrome. He was also diagnosed with a second rare genetic disorder, which is neurofibromatosis, or NF1, which is a tumor disease, and autism. So he has three things going on. So it can be a little complicated, but he has really done well. He's integrated into a mainstream classroom in school, so he'll be going into the seventh grade. He's very, very outgoing, loves people. And my husband and I always say that he has brought so many people into our lives. It's been amazing having him. We travel a lot, so we travel for his healthcare to many different places, and especially because he has the two genetic disorders. But every trip we go on, we meet new people. In fact, we just got back from Philadelphia. He just had surgery last week. And we've been staying at the same hotel in Philadelphia since he was two. So the people that work there that are still there are almost like family to us. They have gifts for him. They are, you know, they take pictures with him. We correspond with them throughout the years. We have developed some great, great relationships with many different people all over the country, actually all over the world. And, you know, if we didn't have Jake, we wouldn't have had all these great experiences. He's also doing... He loves to swim and he loves basketball. So we will find him often out in our driveway playing basketball. And he also right now has been a part of Scouts. So he's a Boy Scout and he has a mission to make Eagle Scout. And that is one of his goals. And we've been, again, very lucky that our scouting group has worked with us to modify things to help him, but he's doing fantastic.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful to hear. How is he intellectually?
He is, again, doing pretty well. I would say he's about 2 years behind. So he's, like I said, in seventh grade. So he's really probably academically around a fifth grade level, but it also depends on what the subject is. So he loves math. So he's doing, you know, he's doing pretty well in math. Mm-hmm. He reads on about a fifth, sixth grade level. Comprehension is really hard for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that, again, from what we were told in the very beginning, that he would never walk, he would never talk. You know, there wasn't going to be much we could do for him.
Wow. They told you this?
They did, in the NICU. It was, again, this unfortunate physician that we had before we had the geneticist who gave us our hope.
And this was in Nebraska, right? In Omaha.
Yeah. Which is interesting because Omaha, is a city. I mean, we have almost a million people in the surrounding areas. We have great universities and we have a wonderful children's hospital. So it goes to show that even if you have the best healthcare around, it is a rare disease and not everybody knows about it. And mm-hmm. if you don't know about it, you make assumptions or you Google. So that was also one of the missions at, or it still is at PWSA, is really getting more education out to the NICU, physicians, social workers, so that they can provide the families the connection to PWSA right away. And we can offer that hope and education. And we can show that, you know, there is a life for these kids and many of them are doing well. It is also a spectrum disorder, so I don't want to sugarcoat, you know, there are individuals who are not doing as well, but all of the kids have great potential. And, we did have two younger adults speaking at our conference during the PFDD meeting, and they did a fantastic job. And it just, again, goes to show that with the right help and the right education, these kids have a lot to give in life, and they are amazing.
This is wonderful. Paige, we're out of time. I really appreciate you talking to us. Paige Rivard, in Omaha, Nebraska. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.